What I'd like to do is take you through another sonata form movement, only this is moving forward about 10 or 15 years, I guess about actually closer to 15 to 20 from this one. Mozart wrote these concerti in the 1780s. The symphony that we just heard by Haydn was written in the 1790s. Let's go about a decade forward into the early 19th century. And this is getting right at the tail end of classicism as we begin to get this transition into romanticism. And let's see what Beethoven was doing with sonata form at about this time. Well, one thing I can tell you he was doing, he was expanding it. One of the characteristics of Beethoven's music compared to Haydn's and Mozart's is that it's longer. Beethoven tended to write very expansive music. And if you think about it, as you get into the Romantic period, you begin to get bigger pieces. If you've ever been to let's say a National Symphony concert where you've heard a Mozart symphony or a Haydn symphony and then a Mahler symphony, you know there's a significant difference in length. And of course, Mahler is right at the end of the 19th century and actually into the early 20th a little bit. Probably the most significant composition in terms of classical structure and in terms of historical development at this time is Beethoven's Third Symphony. It's one of the pivotal pieces in the history of music. This is the symphony you may know as the Eroica. And what we'll do today is take a look at the first movement of this. This is his symphony number 3, which is entitled Eroica. And of course, Eroica simply means, if it were translated into English, heroic. There's a little story behind the title on this, by the way, kind of an interesting story. Beethoven was very much a follower of the French Revolution. He was quite a radical. In fact, Goethe once referred to him as a completely untamed personality, which sort of does, there's a lot of truth to that. But anyway, he lived in Vienna, but he was a strong supporter of Napoleon in the early days of Napoleon. Remember, Napoleon at first appeared to Europe to be the savior of the French Revolution. You had the French Revolution happen, then you had almost a period of chaos going on where it looked like for a period of time that the whole revolution may collapse. And then Napoleon came along and sort of restored order and became first consul. And Beethoven was a big follower of Napoleon at that time. And through he knew some of the people from France in the French embassy and things like that. And there was some suggestion about writing, why don't you write a symphony about Napoleon or dedicated to Napoleon? And Beethoven thought it was a great idea. And so he did. And just about the time this symphony was finished, he got word that Napoleon had crowned himself emperor. Well, he was furious. And the story is that he ripped out the title page, which originally was dedicated to Napoleon, and then wrote another title page and dedicated it to the memory of a heroic man. And that's where we get the term Eroica. Now, I say the story goes like that. The story is about 95% true. And the reason I say this, the only part that's not true is Beethoven ripping out the title page. He didn't do that. The title page still exists, by the way. The manuscript still exists. He erased Napoleon's name is what he did. Because you can actually, if you were to look at the original manuscript, you can see Napoleon sort of faint with lots of heavy erasure over it. And then this other thing. So that's the way this particular piece came about as far as the title is concerned. Now, the piece itself is in many ways a classical symphony. It's 4 movements, fast, slow, dance, fast. But in some ways, it goes far beyond typical classicism. What happens here is Beethoven is taking this, in the case of the first movement, is taking sonata form. He's stretching it. He's filling it with a kind of tension that never existed before. And he's making something much more powerful and dynamic and emotional about it. I think what I'd like to do is sort of try and explain what's going to happen in the first movement and then play it straight through, because the way to really get the feel of this movement is to hear it build up, because it builds completely. Beethoven maintains tension until the very end. And the movement itself is long. If you think about a classical symphony, you know, mostly the whole symphony is maybe 20 minutes long or something. This first movement is about 15 minutes long in itself. So for a classical single movement, it's quite long. And the fact that Beethoven can keep the tension up is absolutely remarkable. And essentially, here's what's happening. It starts with a couple of chords, just a couple of big chords. And then you'll hear this opening theme played by the cellos. Now, the theme starts off in a fairly dynamic way. It's essentially just the tonic chord. But notice what happens to it. It starts off, but doesn't seem to really come to any kind of strong cadence. It just sort of dribbles off at the end, is essentially what happens. And then it goes off into various other things. And what you hear at the beginning, and this is sonata form, so we're talking about the first group of the exposition, you'll hear that theme three times. And each time it's a little bit stronger until the third time it comes in quite loud and quite forcefully. And in between those you have various digressions. One of the most important of the digressions is syncopation. Now, we haven't defined the term syncopation itself. Essentially what syncopation means, it's where you have some sort of accent that's in conflict with the meter. And this particular, remember meter, by the way, this particular movement is in triple meter, and that triple meter is absolutely important. In other words, it's very important that you get a feel for that three as we listen to it. And I'll count a good bit, because it's the tension between the basic three and then the accents appearing in different places that are in conflict with the standard three that create much of the dynamism and drive of the movement. So at the beginning, he gives you that opening theme three times, interspersed with syncopation. Then it goes off into other themes. It's a fairly long exposition with a lot of themes, but they do break down into two groups and so forth, just like you would expect. And later on in the exposition, involving some other themes, you'll hear more syncopation and even stronger syncopation. So this business of the meter and conflict with the meter is critically important to the movement. So we get through the exposition, and when we come to the end of the exposition, it's very much like what we encountered before and what you were asking a question about. It's not real clear. The exposition doesn't come to a clear ending, and it just sort of bridges over into the development. And it's in the development that we begin to see some unusual things happening. First of all, we go into this, after a while, have this passage, just a massive syncopated passage where it's very hard to keep any sense of what the original meter was. The accents are so strong and they're so off the standard beat. And then as you get to the end of that and it dies down a little, you hear this really kind of nice tune in a fairly remote key from where we started. Dee-da-dee. And so forth, and it goes on and on like that. Now, that's kind of nice. only problem is, this is the middle of the development section. We've never heard this tune before. In other words, what Beethoven is doing is square in the middle of the development. He's introducing a fairly straightforward tune with a clear phrase structure, which just simply was not in the exposition. So that's a bit unusual in itself. The next unusual thing that happens is when you get to the end of the exposition. I should say development. When you get to the end of the development section, and at the beginning of the recapitulation, you know at the beginning of the recapitulation what happens is that the tonic returns. Now, how do you set the tonic up? Remember this, if you precede it with the dominant, then it's going to sound like a tonic. So if our tonic is the dominant would be this. R could be in different position. And then you know the tonic is coming. Well, Beethoven has this long passage at the end of the development where things sort of settle onto the dominant. In other words, he's giving you lots of dominant preparation so you can expect the tonic to appear. And it gets quieter and quieter. And finally, you hear just a couple of notes of the dominant being played by the violins. And while the violins are holding those two notes, the horns come in with the tonic. So you get this kind of conflict. Or the whole dominant would be this, and then. It's quite a clash. Then what happens? The whole orchestra jumps in with the dominant, as if to say to the horns, shut up, you're too soon. And then, at that point, the recapitulation begins. Now, there's no question that Beethoven calculated this. In fact, one of his friends, I believe it was Ferdinand Ries, who was standing next to Beethoven during the sort of dress rehearsal of this, heard the horns come in, turned to Beethoven and said, those damn horns came in wrong. And he said Beethoven was furious with him at that remark, because clearly Beethoven meant it. Well, right after that, we settle into the recapitulation. And what's the one thing you know about the recapitulation? You stay in the tonic key, right? Wrong, in this case. Beethoven no longer starts in the tonic, which happens to be E-flat, but then he modulates to another key, fairly remote, and then to a different key, fairly remote. You'll hear the theme played first in the strings, and then you'll hear it in the flute, and you'll hear it in the horn, and it's in different keys each time. Finally, after all of that, he settles back into the tonic, and the recapitulation proceeds pretty normally. Well, what's all this about? What's the effect here? The effect is that he's completely muddied the water as far as the recapitulation is concerned. First of all, it sounded like it started two measures too soon. Then it tended not to, you know, sort of bounced around for a while and not to be there. So the whole idea of the recapitulation as being that point where all the tensions are resolved, it just doesn't quite happen. Well, Beethoven calculated that, because where the real tension is resolved in this movement is not at the beginning of the recapitulation, but at the beginning of the, I'm sorry, but well into the coda. So you have a massive coda after the recapitulation here, and it's in this coda where finally things first of all come to a monster climax, and it's at that point that all of this tension that had been building up for 12, 13 minutes finally is resolved. Now, what's also interesting, remember I said as you go from the exposition into the development, you can't really, you know, you're not really sure, just sort of because it's not real clear. There's not a strong cadence. And then the recapitulation, it becomes so muddied, you're not really sure. The one spot where you can hear, I think, quite clearly is where the coda begins. Because in this case, what Beethoven does, he's in one key, and he doesn't modulate. He just jumps to another key, and it's quite startling. He's in E flat, and then he's going along. And then, all of a sudden, you hear, which is just a completely different key, and that begins the coda. And as you go into the coda, one of the things you hear is... Remember that tune from the development? Well, Beethoven didn't have a chance to recapitulate it in the recapitulation because it didn't appear in the tonic, so... It's there in the development. I mean, I'm sorry, in the coda. But more important, you go through a passage, again, a passage of some fairly extended syncopation, and then you start to hear this. Which is that opening theme, only this time it doesn't dribble off into some strange area, but he repeats it. Four times, or he repeats it three times. You hear it four times. First on the tonic, then on the dominant, then all that repeats, and then each time it gets a little louder and a little stronger until finally the fourth time the trumpets blare it out. I'm sorry. That's the way it is at the end. It goes down at the beginning. And that at that point, you begin to realize what Beethoven had been doing. If you hear just that ending by itself, it sounds kind of loud and all of that impressive, but not all that exciting. But if you've been following this movement, like I say, for almost 15 minutes, where tension has been building up, where he's been somehow thwarting every resolution that had occurred, and then you hear that spot, it's absolutely hair-raising. And what Beethoven has done, he's completely changed the dynamics of the form. He's moved, he's maintained tension until almost the end of the coda, and he's moved that point of denouement, in which we find in sonata form normally in the recapitulation, to the end of the coda.